Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we are going to be talking about a subject that I know all of you are familiar with, and that is meditation. My guest today is Pragito Duff. Her book is titled Laughter, Tears, Silence. This is a book that was written for the purpose of empowering you in a way that I think you will find very, very significant. Pragito, welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna. Thank you.
Now, you have been very much involved in training people to meditate. You're in the San Francisco area. Give us a little bit of your background. What was it that, well, made you decide that this was something that you wanted to dedicate your life to, and also to empower other people to understand this aspect we call meditation?
Well, it all started for me when I was a very small little girl, and I had a very challenging childhood, and I had a lot of pain and fear and anger stuffed down inside me that I could not express. And when I became a little bit older, into my early 20s, I started to look around for ways I could heal myself. And I found these expressive meditations, like the laughter meditation, the tears meditation. There's gibberish, there's dancing, there's humming, there's dynamic. There's a whole range of them. And the reason I liked them so much was because I was able to express my anger and transform it into creativity in a meditative context. I was able to heal my pain and transform it into love and inner peace in a meditative context. And I was able to transform my fear mostly through the laughter meditation into joy and creativity and inner peace. So it's through my own personal experience that I'm so confident in the results that these meditations give.
In your book, you talk about your mom, who mm-hmm. was finally diagnosed at the age of 94.
Yes.
That she had a psychotic illness because her behavior was very erratic, and that was part of what went on inside of you. You didn't understand what it was that was going on in your environment. There were other things that occurred too, but that's something that so many times we don't know when we're children, the extent of variables that are in the adult world. All we know is what's around us. And so lots of times we carry garbage for a long time.
That's exactly right. I had no idea my mother was psychotic. All I knew was that I was terrified of her. It was like having a tyrant in the house. And it was very painful, and I was scared to death. And, of course, I also made me angry because I couldn't express myself. And so, yes, often as children we don't know, and then we get into adulthood and we have to find solutions to why we have these feelings when we're full of inner turmoil. Emotional turmoil, you know, mental overload or physical stress, these all come up. And what I found was these expressive techniques offer solutions to rid ourselves of all the turmoil and find the inner peace which we're all born with.
Well, you talk about a 20th century mystic,
mm-hmm.
Osho.
Mm-hmm.
Who is Osho? And how did you become acquainted with that? I know there are so many different variables, but your book has a lot of humor in it, as well as some other very thoughtful things. But Osho, who is Osho?
Well, Osho is a Japanese mystic. He passed away about 20 years ago. And I think I heard about him through friends at the time. But the reason I was attracted to his work was because up until that point, I thought that meditation meant, you know, sitting in silence in the lotus posture and possibly chanting mantras or something. And the last thing I could do was sit in silence because I couldn't sit still. I had too much inner turmoil. And I was very intrigued by his approach to meditation, which gave you this, the first stage or the first two stages to be very expressive and dump out all this inner chaos that I was feeling and this inner stress, so that I could transform those feelings of anger, grief, and fear into creativity, inner peace, and find my inner wisdom. So that was my big attraction to Osho, because what he did was he created some new techniques and he updated a lot of ancient techniques, like the gibberish technique, which was first created by the Sufi mystic Jabbar, and because he realized that in this 20th and 21st century lifestyle we had, which is very crazy making, he felt we needed more than just sitting in silence. We needed first to have a possibility to take the lid off the pressure cooker and release all that inner stress. Then it's very easy to sit in silence.
I think that in today's world, we can literally be going from the moment our feet hit the floor until we put our head down at night and we blink and it seems like the day is gone.
Yes.
And then there is that earnest desire to slow things down, and we honestly don't know how to do it. We can try, but it's as if we slow down, what's going to happen? It just seems like things are speeding up. This is something that I've been experiencing in conversation, people talking about this very essence, and I'm just in awe of it, because it is like a blink, and I'm sure there's a few people out there that say, oh, I'm so bored, it seems like everything's moving as slow as a snail. But almost everyone I talk with, no matter what their age, young, middle age, or old, doesn't make any difference. It's just a blink. And so they feel almost like they've got to do that all the time. I like what you say in your book, though. You say if you're in the shower and you're sensing and you're aware of the water, that is a meditation.
Yes.
And yes. I think that is so important.
Yes, and also what I'm talking about in the book is what meditation is and what it is not. Because a lot of people think meditation is a technique. Meditation, I mean, there are many meditation techniques, but meditation is awareness. Meditation is a quality of being fully present with whatever you are doing. So at any given moment, whether you're brushing your teeth or taking your shower or drinking your coffee or driving your car, you can be fully present. And this is how you can incorporate meditation into your day-to-day life. It's actually easier than you think. Once you understand what meditation is. Because when we are fully present, the activity doesn't matter. What matters is the quality of our presence with the activity. And then when we are fully present, you're going deeper into the moment, then certainly the moment has a better quality to it. And I have found myself that I have more access to my creativity, to my sense of humor. I experience each moment with more fullness, so that I don't feel that life is getting away from me. I feel that I am experiencing my life each day, each moment of each day.
I agree. You have a section in your book that I just absolutely loved, and it's on the healing power of laughter. And you say meditation can be fun, and one of the things that you should do is say, yoo-hoo, you know. and there's something about doing that.
Yes.
I mean, you can see kids do it, and I've done it at different times, and it automatically creates a lightness. And when I found that in your book, I thought, yes, that's a great thing to do. And the thing is, you can do it by yourself. If you're afraid that you're going to embarrass someone, you don't just want to go, yoo-hoo. No, that's not it. You got to give it a yoo-hoo kind of
yahoo
thing.
Yes, exactly.
And sort of punch the air with your arm. And you talked about a meeting where you did this, and everybody was dressed in business suits.
Yes.
And it totally ripped away all of this intensity of seriousness. And I thought that was just great.
Yes, that was really hilarious. Everybody, it was their lunchtime. It was a corporation, and everybody was sitting there in their business suits. And I just had everybody, you know, raise their arms in the air and shout, yahoo, burst out laughing. And then they couldn't stop laughing.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I mean, it's you know, it's very easy. In fact, one of my students the other day, she said she tried it on a new group that she was sharing this with, and everybody just rolled with laughter. Just, it's such a simple thing, but it really works. It's very powerful.
I can remember when I was first introduced to Buddha, the Buddha Hotai, and you brought out this wonderful story in your book about Buddha going through a village. Would you share that with us?
Yes, Hotei the Laughing Buddha, and he's the 16th century Japanese mystic with the big belly that you might have seen little statues of, and he has his arms raised up in the air. And what Hotei did is he went from village to village in Japan with a big sack of candy over his shoulder for the children. And the villagers would wait for him, and they would have all these serious questions about enlightenment to ask him. And all he did was laugh. And, of course, laughter being very contagious. And then, of course, they just all started laughing, and they forgot all their serious questions. And his way of teaching enlightenment was through laughter, because in the split second that you're laughing, you just are in the present moment, and all your problems disappear, and all the thoughts of the mind disappear, and you just are there. And, of course, it's a very fun way. And then there's another wonderful story about him where one day he was in one of the villages, and he was sitting under a tree with his eyes closed. And the villagers came up and said, Hotei, what is the matter with you? You're sitting under the tree with your eyes closed. You're not laughing. And he said, I am regenerating myself, because when I express a lot of energy when I do all the laughter. And by the way, this is the two stages of the laughter meditation. The first stage is laughing. And the second stage, you sit and close your eyes and you sit in silence and you take all that energy inside. And this is how you recharge and rejuvenate and find that way to drop down to your inner peace and calm. So this was how Hotei taught enlightenment. And Osho was one of the people that I learned it from, who sort of brought it to our attention, because I think Hotei had got a little bit forgotten. And people love it. It's actually the most popular meditation I do.
Well, I can understand why. I really can.
Yes.
Now, you make some comments. Don't sacrifice the present moment for the future.
Yes.
Being in the now of the moment. I think that is such a gift, when you can be in the now of a moment, and then whatever has gone on in that moment, then releasing it. I can remember talking with someone, this is a bit extreme, but someone who had the tendency of just, if they were upset or agitated, boom, they'd blow up or whatever they would do, upset everybody around them, but they felt fine and they just went on their merry way. And people would say, wait a minute, do you realize what you've done? You've created such an upset.
Mm-hmm.
In our world today, so many times people don't have an honesty with their own emotions, and they're afraid to talk about things because they were told not to speak about them, not to do this, not to do that. Well, my goodness. Life is going to have its criticisms. None of us are exempt from that, because we're all going to goof every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's what we do with it and how we respond to it that makes the difference. So what would you say to someone that is in an extremely agitated situation? They know they have to speak their truth as they perceive it. And how can they make it okay just to let it go? Put it out there and let it be, because sometimes things have to be said. You cannot just sweep things under the rug.
Right.
You have to bring them out so that they have some fresh air. So so that there can be communication. But then how do you release that? Because sometimes people hang on to those feelings.
Right. Well, this is where the expressive techniques come in. And what I suggest for people to do in that situation is, first of all, take a deep breath and try and remember that you will be better heard if you speak in a calm manner, whatever you have to say, that if you say it calmly. And then what you can do, don't want to do this in front of other people, but you can do the gibberish meditation technique when you get home. And in the gibberish technique, there's two stages. The first stage, with eyes closed, is you just shout and mumble and you speak in gibberish, and you really let rip all of your emotional charge that you have around whatever it is. But you do it in gibberish. And the idea is to get all of that charge out of your body and mind. And the second stage, you just sit in silence. And then you can easily drop down to your center, to calm and inner peace and inner wisdom. And then from that place, creativity arises. And you can see maybe where some creative solutions might be to whatever the problem was. You could always go back to the person the next day and say, you know, because also your sense of humor has come back by this time. You know, I've been thinking about what happened yesterday and I've come up with these ideas. Would you be interested in discussing this? But by then you're totally calm and relaxed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you have your sense of humor, which always helps.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. One of the things that I find that I do that really helps, I'm not able to do it all the time, but sometimes it's to put on my walking shoes and just go out and walk.
That's a great idea.
To move.
Yes.
Move the
energy.
And shift my mind into a different space. Maybe I'm looking at $500 dresses. I don't care, but I'm getting out of the space because the mind has a way, due to thought patternings, of ensnaring you.
Yes, it does.
And you literally become encompassed by a web of irritation, fault-finding, and total labyrinth type of patterning that you actually will get all angry over something that isn't really real. So when you can do something like that, then
yes,
it helps the release. Now, I liked your section especially on celebrating the path. I really thought that was great. And you even say celebrate your failures. And some people would say, you've got to be kidding. I'm going to celebrate because I failed? Sure. Why not? Then you know something you didn't know before.
Right. Right. And it's all tied in with keeping a positive attitude, trusting.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't always know why things have happened. Sometimes we usually find out later if we don't understand at the time. And keeping in that positive vibration of the law of attraction. Because when we go into a negative state, then we are repelling attracting good things to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can make a practice of, you know, for example, one of my clients once, her husband came home and told her he'd lost his job. So she said, okay, I think we should open a bottle of wine and celebrate.
And the poor guy's sweating bullets.
Yeah,
yes.
He's kind of shocked, you know. But she said, yes, let's celebrate because, okay, this is the end of something, but it's the beginning of something new. Now, because they had that positive attitude, he got a new job fairly quickly,
mm-hmm.
You see, because they just stayed positive about it and started, you know, looking for a new job for him. And this is a very powerful thing to do, because as you mentioned, it can be too easy to get caught up in the negative trap of the mind, which just sees, you know, bad things everywhere because you've just lost your job, which I admit that isn't the greatest thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But this is how life is. Life doesn't always go our way. And so it's a great lesson, and I've used it myself when things don't go our way, to stay positive and see beyond what's gone wrong and keep a positive attitude because life is full of possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And if we keep that celebratory attitude, we'll attract good things quicker.
I agree. You make a number of comments about Zen, the tradition of Zen, and it teaches about effort and effortlessness. And unless you attain effortless effort, which you say in your book looks paradoxical, you've not attained. Zen says you cannot arrive because you're already here. And it reminds me of a scene out of the movie The Karate Kid. I don't remember whether it was 1, 2, or 3, but it was when the karate master was shooting an arrow and just said it already knows where it's supposed to go. And his accuracy was just incredible, but he also was able to catch arrows in the same way. And it was just very profound in the message that they tried to convey in the movie, which I thought was quite significant. And it is that effortlessness. It is the when you let go, and also if a warrior is to succeed, quoting from your book, success must come gently with effort, but no stress or obsession. And yes. I recall a fellow colleague of mine once saying, you know, I'm just amazed at how my life went because I really wasn't out looking for a lot of things, yet they were there for me. And I thought, that's an amazing statement for someone to make. But he really felt that his life had been magical. He was in the broadcasting industry, and he said it had just been amazing the way opportunities had come to him through the years. And I thought, that is like Zen. That's what Zen promotes.
That's what it is. That's the path of effortless effort. Yeah.
Well, you have so many good comments, and you have a section about children.
Yes.
And you say every child is born a Buddha. How do you define a Buddha?
I define a Buddha what we're all born with is inner wisdom and inner peace. We're all born filled with joy and laughter and love and the qualities of being fully present. All those qualities, it's nothing to do with Buddhism, it's really just a phrase, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Those are the qualities that every child is born with. That means every person is born with. But unfortunately, they get buried. That's what happens to me. You know, they got buried under all this fear and anger and pain. And it was like I had to excavate my way back through all this garbage or get rid of it, which is my great confidence in these expressive meditations, because they helped me to do that so that I rediscovered that inner wisdom and inner peace and joy and laughter and love, which they're always there. I mean, there's an endless supply of love within us, of wisdom, of inner peace, of joy. And when we have access to that, then that's when our lives become truly magical. And we flow through life with grace and ease. So I know from my own experience it's very possible, even if you've had a very difficult time and a very challenging time, to refine those qualities within oneself that we're all born with. Every single person is born with them.
Mm-hmm. And also, you have a section on tears, and I don't know of anyone whose life is not touched in some way with sadness or trauma or tragedy, disappointment, criticism. I mean, we're all going to go through that. That's part of living. It's not something we should run from. And that is something that you bring out, that when we're feeling those emotions, we need to feel them honestly, not run from them, but allow them to be what they are. They're there for a reason, and we don't grow because someone says, you know, gives us a little bit of pablum, mental pablum, and that's it. There's a lot more to life than that.
Yes, yes, there absolutely is. I mean, it's the comedy of life and the tragedy of life, and there is pain in life because there is death. And as you just so rightly said, I mean, we don't want to run from it. We want to face it and embrace it. Because when we do, and this is something I have done, it brings a great calm, and it heals the fear. I think it's just that people are afraid of death, and they're afraid of pain, and they're afraid of the unknown. And when we find the courage to face the fear, it actually disappears quite easily. And this is, I go back to the laughter meditation because it has so many benefits. And one of the great things that heals fear is laughter.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be worried and afraid and laughing at the same time.
Well, that's very, very true. And
you know?
That is something that when you are fearful, the body many times will end up developing illness. When you're filled with anger and hate, there will be things that go wrong with the body. The mind-body connection is absolutely incredible.
Yes.
And that linkage is so significant. And when you're comfortable in your own skin, you'll know it.
That's
when
right.
you're not comfortable in your own skin, you'll know it. But
yes.
it's having that honesty with it, too.
And I do want to encourage your listeners, you know, especially to try the laughter because it is, well, it's fun and
mm-hmm.
it has so many healing benefits. I mean, certainly for releasing stress from the body and helping to release the grip of the mind so that the mind starts to relax more, the body starts to relax more, and then everything seems to fall into place more easily. And as I said, it's just a tremendous amount of fun.
I agree.
Go ahead. Well, I wanted to say, you can learn to deliberately laugh more, which is what I did and I encourage all my students to do. Look for opportunities to laugh every day because
mm-hmm.
they're there. Yeah, and consciously bring laughter into your life. And if anybody's interested, I do a Laughter Meditation 101 teletraining, and we're starting the next one next week, next Thursday on September the 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
We do it on the phone, and it's once a month for 6 months, and it's a lot of fun, and it's a great way to get started.
Sounds like a great deal to me. You deal with the issue of jealousy, which people have. You deal with the issue of forgiveness. And one of the things that I wanted to quote from your book is, and I thought this was quite significant, awareness knows only the present moment. Once the past disappears, the future automatically disappears because the future is just a projection from the past. This is your freedom. This is your power. This is the source of your well-being. Once you allow this fountain to shower you with its bounty, your life is transformed. And I think that is so significant. And it's always a journey. I think even when we know better, we're always every once in a while going to get stuck in our mental mucky muck.
Right.
And it's good, like you said, to have practices that you can do, as you describe in your book, Laughter, Tears, and Silence, that will allow you to sort of lighten up a little bit and to be honest about your emotions and your feelings.
Yes.
Because fear is something that comes because we don't know how to control something.
Yes.
And when you can trust and accept, and boy, I'm still learning that lesson, it is trusting and accepting. Sometimes you will go through circumstances that are totally opposite looking of what you would have anticipated. And yet, because of the circumstances, you come in contact with a specific individual, you have certain things fall into your lap, and life works out. It's an amazing phenomenon that I've seen so many times in my life, but I still have to do the yahoo every once in a while to get myself back on track because, you know.
Right, but at least you can have fun with it, you know.
Yes, and it's okay because as a friend of mine told me so many years ago, and she was a very mature elderly lady, and she said, and this too shall pass, Donna, and this too shall pass.
Yes.
Many years later, I can say her words still apply, and this too shall pass. Now, what's your website that people can go to find out more?
It's www.discovermeditation.com.
Discovermeditation.com. Well, I'll tell you what, Pragito Dove, I think your book is delightful, and I wish you the best with your teleclasses. Discovermeditation.com is her website. It's been a pleasure having you as a guest, and I wish you ongoing success. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Donna. I've enjoyed this chat very much.
Wonderful. Don't forget, folks. Yahoo! that's what you want to do. We're taking a break. Bragado Dove, laughter, tears, and silence. This is Donna Siebel. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Siebel. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Siebel publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. If you'd like to call in and chat with me today, telephone lines are now open. The toll-free telephone number for you to call in to is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Well, I was sent some information. This may sound a little strange, about bathroom etiquette tips for the office. Gee, you wouldn't think you'd have to tell people about this. But I guess there are some very significant things that need to be put out there for people to be reminded about. So I've got some of that. I've got a wonderful story about an animal that made a difference in the life of a little boy and something else here in Circle of Kindness. And we're going to be sharing that with you in the next half hour. But if you want to call in and chat with me, the telephone number to call into is 888-815-9756. Now, remember, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, of course, I like to know where you're calling from. After that, I'll give you exactly what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that is significant to you. I want to remind those of you in the state of Washington, the Emerald Spiral Expo is being held at Kent Commons in Kent, Washington on Saturday, September 25th. The hours are 9 to 5, and this used to be the Boeing Parapsychology Expo. And I want you to know that I'm going to be there, and I'll be available for many consultations, as well as having an abundance of books, as usual. So I hope you'll stop by and say hello. There's no admission charge to this wonderful event. I've been participating in this with them for a long time, and I hope that you will be able to join me. So again, for those of you in the state of Washington, the Emerald Spiral Expo coming up a week from day after tomorrow. It's September the 25th, hours 9 to 5, and there's all kinds of wonderful things happening. Now go to their website, emeraldspiral.com. That's emeraldspiral.com. I look forward to seeing you there. I wanted to share something with you about traveling with a laptop. I know that in our home office, we have had various experiences with computers, and we have now decided, because you can get these little units that you can take with you, these little external drives that can fit right on a key ring, and they're now in the size of a terabyte, so flash drive, whatever you want to call them. And I have just been amazed at how tiny these things have become and how efficient they are in storing data. And if you're on a business trip, or let's say you're going to and from school or whatever, you're moving with your laptop quite a bit, you should have backup copies of all your data, and also store it, if you have an external drive at home, store it there. But I found out some information. There are people that said they backed up their data with Carbonite. It was an internet-based backup program, so they can restore data on the road when they're traveling. And they like to use strong passwords, which are at least 9 random characters long, and they use symbols, letters, and numbers. So you have to keep your notes somewhere. I know of someone that had to go in and try to find passwords, and it was not a joke. They had used such long passwords that they hadn't written them down. And then after a while, because they hadn't had to use the password for quite a long time, they found they'd totally forgotten it. So keeping something somewhere where you can gain access to those passwords that are very complicated and involved, that would be great. Also, these people said that they take an encrypted flash drive with scans of all their valuable papers, including credit cards, passports, and airline tickets. They say with iron key drives, files can't be accessed without a password. They also encrypt their laptop files using an R10 cipher. Now, I'm not a specialist on this, and I would say if you want to check on any of these things, because things can happen with laptops, but if you have those portable flash drives that you can use, or anything that allows you to transport your material with you, I have a friend who has very special medical records for herself and for her family members. And she, just as soon as they started coming out with those little portable sticks, she started putting all of their information on there. And as it turned out, there was a particular trip she was on. She became quite ill. She had to be taken into an emergency room. And as it turned out, it was a small town type of an emergency room. And having that flash drive, having that little scan, that little stick, she was able to say, here's everything on the stick. And her husband had a copy, too, and he was able to help them retrieve the files. They had everything they needed, and they realized that the circumstances she was going through physically, she had to go to another hospital because they were not equipped to handle it. If she had not had all of that documentation on that stick, that portable stick with her, she would have been in a very, very serious situation. It had all of her doctor contact information, et cetera. So these are little things that can make a difference. Also, apparently, there is a program called Banana VPN. It's a virtual private network that allows you to access any sensitive online sites such as a bank, PayPal, et cetera. Now, this is encrypted, and it remains hidden from potential hackers. If you happen to be at an internet cafe, if you're in the airport, and these people said they never, ever conduct online banking on a public internet hotspot or via their hotel's internet service provider without the program. So that is called, again, the Banana VPN. And also they keep track of their laptop and thumb drive at all times and keep them in the hotel safe when they go out. They say that they are noticing more and more people are traveling only with a smartphone, but there are so many people like this couple said that they have to have their laptops. They said, we've heard too many anecdotes from fellow travelers about hacked credit card numbers, lost data. So these precautions, yes, they are time-consuming, but they are very much worthwhile. And this was information from Paul Lasley and Elizabeth Harriman. Boy, it seems like every week I hear stories about accounts being hacked, like mine was, or you have other things that are going on and people using their laptops. And anything that's out on the internet is public. And there are some very, very sophisticated people. It's amazing, absolutely amazing. So I just wanted to share that data with you because I know you're very computer savvy, so having those points, I think, will be of assistance to you. I know they were educational for me. All right, what are some bathroom etiquette tips? I know you wouldn't expect that to be talked about. Well, you'd be surprised. People do not realize that when they're on their cell phones, they should be considerate to the person that they are speaking with, and they should not be using it in the bathroom. Right. Do you know that thousands upon thousands of cell phones are lost down toilets? Now, what in the world is going to go on that you can't wait until after you're finished in that particular point of privacy? And also, and this comes from Excel, they say this is for the office, it doesn't matter how close you think you are to the person or how important the conversation is, you can wait until you're out of the bathroom to talk about it. Besides the fact that you both are exposed while in the stall, most people aren't comfortable having a conversation while urinating. Keep the office gossip confined to the water cooler. I agree, but also realize that the sound effects of flushing just aren't cool. And if you can't be more discriminating, you should be. One of the things I learned many, many years ago, because I worked for a telephone company for a number of years, and in the training they taught us, and that was before you had cell phones to pick up everything and anything anyway, telephones, you would be amazed at the sounds that you can hear. And lots of times people forget when they're on the cell phone, everything is being picked up around them. And you just really need to be aware. Also, if you are in the office, and you realize that the toilet paper is running out, you find out where the supplies are and replace it. You know, there's a lot of things that need to be done. And I know I've been in different facilities, and all you have to do is go to management and say, gee whiz, you need to stock in some more supplies or what have you. Things like this are important. And remember one thing. When you're in an office, that bathroom, it is, don't do all your grooming there. That's just not really appropriate. It's not good to go in with your makeup bag or whatever and just figure like you're going to use it as you would your bathroom at home. That's inappropriate. The work bathroom is never a place to shave or cut your toenails. I know this sounds gross, but people do this stuff. And they say it goes without saying that you should not be bringing reading materials into the work bathroom for an extended stay, especially if there's only a few stalls. And also they say keep the bathroom clean. They ask you when you're on planes to wipe down the sink and do other things. Well, treat the bathroom as if it were your bathroom at home. Keeping it clean and fresh for others to use is important. And if you should be one of those individuals that creates an odor of a particular genre, then you want to be courteous enough to spray air freshener for people who will be using it after you. And if you make a mess around the sink, clean it up. And if you drop stuff on the floor, pick it up. Well, it's very, very important, and it's etiquette, and that's something that often is not taught today, but it does make a difference. It also has a big reflection on how the working place is evaluated, and stop and think about how you feel when you walk into a place that's not tidy, that is not monitored, and it is just an unpleasant experience all the way around. I've been in a few of those, and I'm sure you have too, but that came from Excel, and those are some tips for you and the office bathroom. Anyway, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. We're going to be taking a break for a moment. Phone lines are open if you want me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. When we come back, I'll share a little bit of this with you and a little bit of that and maybe some more. This is Donna Sebo. Don't go away.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Love is an amazing thing. And I was watching a program on a cable channel last night about cats and dogs and the impact that they have on people. And I was watching interviews, and every one of the people had a very special relationship with their animals. And they would talk about how one woman who had a cat said that there was this child that she had that would go through these real emotional ups and downs, had bipolar problems. And there was a cat, and she had like six cats. And this one cat, all she had to do was take this cat in to this little girl, and this little girl would calm down immediately. And the cat just seemed to level out whatever the child's anxiousness was. And the mother had learned how to utilize the animal in that way. And the cat's happy as it can be. It just loves the little girl, and it basically is the little girl's cat. And then there was someone else that had gone through a very bad bout with alcoholism. And in dealing with the alcoholism, he found that his cat would pat the door outside. He would put the cat outside the door of his bedroom while he was guzzling his booze. And the cat would meow and would want to come in to be with him, and it all of a sudden made him realize that this animal was trying to communicate with him, "You don't need to do this. I love you. I care." And, of course, those are human words that I'm expressing, but he just absolutely adores this cat. He said, "This cat didn't blame me. All she wanted to do was to have me hold her." And she said, as she would purr, I'd find I'd calm down. Well, he's no longer now the hardcore alcoholic he was. And he said it has been just so meaningful to him because it was this animal that helped him get over this addiction that he had because she was there for him always. And there are these stories and more wonderful stories about dogs. And I wanted to share this particular story with you because it's about a little boy. His name is Sammy, and I've got a picture of him in front of me. He's just adorable. And when he was born 4 months early. He weighed 17 ounces and was in the hospital for a long, long time. As we all know, with babies, it's very important that they're touched, that they're held. When children, animals, are not lovingly held, cradled, cuddled with, they suffer tremendously. Well, that is what was going on with this tiny, tiny preemie baby. However, there was a nurse. Her name was Linda. No, I'm corrected. There was a nurse that took a woman, Linda. Let me correct myself. Linda was in the hospital, and she was visiting as a foster parent. She had a nursing background. And so she happened to stop by this area, and a doctor walked by, and he said, "Linda, whatever you do, don't get attached to this tiny baby. We don't expect him to make through the night at all." Now, she had been a nurse in neonatal and pediatric intensive care units for over 22 years, And she had seen a lot of children brought into the world the way Sammy had been. And she said usually it was because the mothers were drug addicts and they'd never know these children. And the babies, for 22 years she watched hundreds of babies struggle for every single breath that they take or took and had all kinds of procedures. And the only one that was ever able to hold them would be the loving nurses that were there. And Linda saw this little boy, Sammy, and she just went home to her husband. And their children are pretty well grown. And she said, you know, I think we need to be a foster parent to these babies. It will mean a lot to us. And I know we can't save every child, but if we can help a couple, it'll make a difference. Well, she managed to get a hold of this premature infant's file, Sammy, and she said what she read just absolutely made her knees go weak. He was undergoing agonizing withdrawal symptoms from his mother's drug abuse. As a tiny, tiny baby, he had gone through 7 intestinal surgeries and required injections every other day for a dangerous skin condition that covered his tiny body. He had flatlined 4 times, had to be resuscitated, and she just said, oh my goodness, we've got to bring this baby home. This baby needs all of the love that he can get. Well, now this wasn't easy, because at the time, 22-month-old Sammy had big, big medical issues. He had a catheter, a feeding tube, and was on, if you can imagine this, 14 different medications. 22 months old. 14 different medications. Now, it seemed like this little boy that had survived that long was always alone. He couldn't sleep. He had to be propped up in the corner of his crib. He just dozed fitfully. And Linda, because of her many years of nursing experience with these tiny babies, said, all I have to do is be patient. I just have to give this little boy time. Well, Linda and her husband, Mac, had a cockapoo named Penny. One day, Sammy's eyes opened enough where he saw the dog. Now, before Linda could stop Penny, she jumped in to Sammy's crib. Well, you can imagine. How would you respond? I would have been anxious. She was anxious. Here's this big dog in with his tiny little baby. But you know what? This little cockapoo wasn't totally grown at the time. He went right up to this tiny child, Sammy, and just put her nose on his little hip. And do you know what? Little Sammy went to sleep for the very first time. Actually went into a sound sleep. Now, the doctors had told Linda that this little Sammy was going to have nothing but setbacks, that he probably would never be able to read or write. He wasn't going to bond with anybody, but you know what? He bonded with that cockapoo Penny. Linda said, okay, hey, docs, you're wrong. This is one little boy that's going to beat the odds. Now, Linda spent a lot of time with Sammy, and she would hold him so that he would be able to feel something. She taught him to eat by mouth. She used his pacifier, put good things on the pacifier, and before you know it, he started eating on his own and was even at the point where he was throwing some of his favorite food at a foster brother named Matthew. Now, the doctors were astonished. They could not believe what was happening with this little boy. Now, by the time little Sammy celebrated his 3rd birthday, no more tubes. By his 4th birthday, medications, no more. And Linda sometimes wondered if Sammy had an imaginary friend because she'd find him chatting And she wanted to know who he was talking to, and Sammy said, "Oh, they're my angel friends. They always play with me when I'm sick." But you know what? Sammy went through adoption. Linda and Mac adopted him, and he was so excited. He said to the dog, he said, "Penny, I've just adopted Mommy and Daddy." Now, what Linda's done, and I know I'm just about out of time here, she's founded Angels in Waiting. AngelsInWaitingUS.com is her website, and it helps nurses provide loving homes and skilled care to the sickest foster children. And you know what? A lot of those children have been adopted. Sammy's now in the first grade, and he's gifted. He's brilliant. And Linda said, "To the world, you may be just one person, but to one person, you can be the entire world." And Sammy is proof that love is so powerful, it can work miracles. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a wonderful day. We'll be back with you tomorrow. We'll be talking about Ripley's, Believe It or Not, with Tim O'Brien. See you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.